News, I'm Tommy McNeil. A member of President Trump's National Security Council set to testify Thursday in the House investigation about Ukraine has resigned his post. AP Washington correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Tim Morrison, a former top GOP aide appointed to serve on President Trump's National Security Council, is believed to have been among those listening in when President Trump spoke with Ukraine's president about investigating Democrats, the center of an impeachment inquiry. Morrison's testimony will come a day after two Foreign Service officers told lawmakers President Trump was relying on attorney Rudy Giuliani rather than career diplomats to handle Ukraine. House investigators are now summoning former National Security Advisor John Bolton to testify. He openly fought with the administration against using Giuliani for a back-channel operation. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
3 days after President Trump stepped up to a White House podium and told the world Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was finally dead, military officials gave the public a glimpse of the raid that ended his life. Five black and white videos taken by drones flying overhead show attack helicopters blasting and killing a series of dark figures near the compound who fired on U.S. forces as they flew in, before the U.S. forces themselves approach, calling on those inside to surrender. The videos released late Wednesday also show U.S. aircraft using precision-guided munitions to reduce the area to rubble. FBI Director Chris Wray told a House panel taking out the group's leader does not end the threat.
To a large extent, what we're most worried about here in the homeland is the what I would call the virtual caliphate, which is people who are inspired online, which is a lot easier to do and not just all tracing back to one leader.
FBI Director Chris Wray speaking. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A new large wildfire broke out early Wednesday in Southern California, forcing mandatory evacuations at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and nearby neighborhoods. Ventura County fire officials said the fire erupted shortly after 6 in the morning local time and within 2 hours had torched 165 hectares of dry brush in the Simi Valley. That area is about 64 kilometers northwest of Los Angeles. Governor Gavin Newsom told his constituents that wildfires are still flaring up in multiple spots around the Los Angeles area.
Strike teams are currently working not just on the Ventura fire, the Simi/Easy fire, but we have seen some flare-ups, the Hill fire now, that are impacting Ontario Airport and some of the visibility around Ontario Airport, and a fire in Riverside and some others around Calabasas.
He also expressed optimism that the worst is over.
We're going to get through this. I think we're turning a corner. The weather is our friend in Northern California. The winds will begin to die down on Thursday in Southern California. We've got all our assets, you name it. We've got it, the mutual aid, the air resources, the DC-10s.
The U.S. Federal Reserve cut short-term interest rates by 0.25%. It's the third reduction of the year.
The Federal Reserve has cut its benchmark rate for the third time this year and perhaps the last. The short-term rate is now between 1.5% and 1.75%, and Fed Chair Jay Powell suggesting it'll stay there unless the economic outlook gets worse.
If developments emerge that cause a material reassessment of our outlook, we would respond accordingly. But that's what it would take, a material reassessment of our outlook.
Powell notes the economy continues growing at a modest rate with solid job gains and consumer spending. But he also says business investment and exports remain weak amid global trade tensions. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A former Juul Labs executive is alleging that the vaping company knowingly shipped 1 million tainted nicotine pods to customers, AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
That allegation comes in a lawsuit filed by the one-time finance executive who was fired by the vaping giant earlier this year. The lawsuit claims Juul fired the executive for protesting company practices, including shipping the tainted products. A company spokesman says the allegations that Juul shipped tainted products are baseless. The spokesman adds the executive was fired because he failed to meet expectations for the job. The company is under siege from federal and state regulators amid an explosion of underage vaping. Shelley Adler, Washington.
And the Washington Nationals have won the World Series. They defeated the Houston Astros 6-2 to capture the U.S. Capitals' first World Series title since 1924. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 31st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's Supreme Court dismisses election appeal in favor of President Buhari.
The judgment was shocking, and it has not met the expectations of our party as well as the majority of Nigerians who voted for our candidate, Alhaji Atiku Abubakar.
Kola Ologbondiya is the spokesperson for the opposition PDP of Nigeria. President Buhari's government says the court ruling reaffirms the will of the Nigerian people. We will talk with a leading candidate in Guinea-Bissau's upcoming November election as campaigning begins this Saturday. Public sector workers in Liberia suspend a go-slow over salaries payment. And Ugandan President Museveni expresses support for the death penalty.
In order to manage these Africans the way they are now, I'm still with the law of Moses. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. For me, death equals death.
Botswana battles declining female representation in politics and cleaner cooking fuel for Nairobi homes. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's Supreme Court has dismissed last February's presidential election appeal in favor of incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari. The court gave no reasons for Wednesday's unanimous decision by all six justices, but Chief Justice Tanko Muhammad said the justices examined all briefs and exhibits and found no merit in the appeal. Opposition People's Democratic Party PDP candidate Alhaji Atiku Abubakar brought the appeal after losing to President Buhari 41% to 56%. Femi Adesina, special advisor on media and publicity to President Buhari, says the court ruling reaffirms the people's decision.
Naturally, she is delighted, she is happy. A statement has already been issued with thanks and appreciation to Nigerians. And it's delight. The legal battle is finally over. And the
will
of Nigerians
have been upheld. The court did not give any reason. Nigerians want to see why, because there was an appeal challenging the decision of the Elections Commission.
The Supreme Court says it's going to give reasons for the judgment on Friday, and people are willing to wait to hear the reason. But if you ask me, it's a victory long for period. The judgment by the Court of Appeal was so clinical, was so detailed, that only the person hoping against hope will have appealed against that kind of judgment.
What does this mean now in terms of the president carrying out the duties for which he was elected, that is, governing Nigeria?
Like the president said when the Court of Appeal first ruled, that he hadn't been bothered. Because he knew he won the election fair and square, and he knew the judiciary would do the useful. So the president hadn't been bothered. But if there were some people who felt distracted in government, finally the distraction is over. And they can be concentration on serving Nigerians and bringing the dividends of democracy, bringing security, bringing the economy back to shape. And generally running the country and leading it in the right direction.
A lot of, international observers identified some problems, serious problems in the polls in which the president was elected. So is the president going to maybe put more effort into making sure that the electoral process in Nigeria at least is free of these serious problems that were identified?
The opinions of the international observers are not superior to the Supreme Court of Nigeria. The Supreme Court of Nigeria has upheld the election, and that is what matters to Nigeria.
Femi Adesina is the special advisor on media and publicity to Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. A spokesman for the opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP, says a Supreme Court ruling Wednesday does not meet the expectation of the Nigerian voters. PDP candidate Alhaji Atiku Abubakar, who came second in last February's election, went to the Supreme Court after the election tribunal threw out his challenge to the election results. The six justices said in their ruling on Wednesday that they found no merit in Mr. Abubakar's appeal. Kola Olubu Deyan, the National Publicity Secretary of the PDP, says the court's ruling is shocking and does not meet the expectation of the PDP and the majority of Nigerians who voted for former Vice President Abubakar.
From a PDP point of view, our first reaction was a sensation of shock. The judgment was shocking, and it has not met the expectations of our party, as well as the majority of Nigerians who voted for our candidate, Alhaji Atiku Abubakar.
The Chief Justice said that after looking over the complaint and all the exhibits, they found no merit in the appeal that the PDP made. What do you make of that?
We can really not make anything out of the judgment until they provide the reasons through which they arrived at their judgment. So the nation and our party, the New Democratic Party, await the reasons that they were abused for the judgment. Consequently, we will respond as soon as we get the reasons. But as it is, they only came and announced their judgment and said that they found no merit in our appeal and is thereby dismissed. And as such, they will provide the reasons later. So we are with the reasons.
After the February election, some international observers, including the European Union, in addition to your party, identified some serious problems with the election system in Nigeria. So what does this ruling do now? Does this sweep under the carpet those serious problems for which you went to the court? What happens now, let's say, for the next election?
Our expectation, our party, the PDP, is awaiting the reasons that the justices will abuse for the judgment. Because our expectation as a party was that the pronouncement of the highest court in the land will further correct the discrepancies in our electoral processes. And that is why our party is of the position that we have little to say now until when we have read the reasons for this judgment. However, I believe, and I think the position of our party is that President Muhammadu Buhari should call for the electoral bill and return it back to the Senate for further amendments of our electoral laws to guarantee a free and fair election and promote the tenets of democracy. If that is the only legacy Mr. President would leave for the country, we expect him to work on that.
Thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Kola Olubadeya is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja, as the political standoff in Guinea-Bissau enters another day with two prime ministers at the helm and regional bloc ECOWAS declaring President José Mário Vaz's recent sacking of his entire government illegal. The candidates for next month's presidential polls are gearing up to start campaigning, which officially kicks off this Saturday. One of the leading candidates, Domingo Simões Pereira of the ruling PAIGC, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the campaign and the recent sacking of the government.
José Mário Vaz had no power to make such a decision. He is aware of the fact that his mission, his mandate, came to a term on the 23rd of June. Is the summit of the heads of state and government of ECOWAS that in coordination with other stakeholders who decided to allowance his being in the palace just to fill that gap and make sure that he has the capacity to sword in the new government and new general procurator. It was not backed by constitution. It was not backed by any other important law.
What do you think is going to happen with the elections now?
The election should go on because the entity in charge of preparing the election is the government, and the autonomous structure that should accomplish it is the CNE. So the president has nothing to do with that, and himself, he's a candidate, he should look at himself like he looks to the other candidate, you know, as equal, taking decisions like that because he tries to accommodate his interests makes no sense.
Do you think this is because he's scared that he's going to basically lose?
Oh, he knows. He knows that he has no chance. I don't know to whom he's going to lose, and I don't even know if you lose to someone. When you lose, you lose. If somebody else wins, he wins, you know? So I think we went through this crisis that he created. For 5 years, we've been struggling. That gave to the people of Guinea-Bissau a chance to understand who is who stands where. And so we have to accept their verdict. I'm not sure that I'm the one. I believe so. But we have to campaign. We have to explain our ideas, our vision. At the end of the day, on the 24th of November, we should accept whatever the decision is taken by the people of Guinea-Bissau.
Do you think Sissoko or any of the other candidates have anything to do with this sudden firing of the entire government, or do you think it's just about Jomap?
No, I don't make that kind of assessment. I don't know. What I know is that all these people that you are naming are very close to Jomap, and they are close to this way of doing politics.
This is obviously a problem that happens again and again in Guinea-Bissau. Do you think it shows a structural weakness? What do you think is the long-term solution so that this doesn't happen again?
There's nothing wrong with a place called Guinea-Bissau. There's nothing wrong with a country called Guinea-Bissau. Something is wrong with the people that, you know, take decisions in that country. And so I believe, yes, we may revisit our structural design of politics, but at the end of the day, it depends on the way how we look at politics, how we relate to each other.
Domingo Simões Pereira is the presidential candidate for Guinea-Bissau's ruling PAIGC party. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak from Lagos. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Thursday, October 31st. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. In Liberia, the Consortium of Public Sector Workers Organization has suspended a nationwide go slow it had planned over payment of salary arrears and other concerns. Civil Service Union President Moiba Johnson says the decision to call off the go slow came after workers reached an agreement with the government to pay all salary arrears and regularize insurance premiums before the end of December 2019.
Last week, Wednesday, a consortium of public sector workers organizations gave the Liberian government a letter of 2 weeks to recall our wage payment as well as payment of all premiums deducted from our wages by insurance companies, and to immediately stop with irregular deduction of percentages from our wages, among others. The government told us that, yes, we have legitimate means, but then again, looking at the economy, in the basket of affairs, it was about 2 days that we can take some adjustments in our demand. And that is, by December, they agreed that all payments will be current, and as of December, wage payment will now be regular. So they asked us to accept that. Two, the wage bill civilization, which is now at $297 million, is supported also by us by allowing the deduction of 8.4% of our wages across the sector with the exemption of three entities, and that is the health workers, the teachers, as well as the security apparatus. For us, our major concern is how our wages will come to us in time, because as I speak to you now, one of our members whose children are in public schools and even in private schools, most of them are not in school.
Mr. Johnson,
yes.
So according to this understanding you reached with the government will put back the deduction that had been taken from your salaries, but also that it will regularize your salary payments. Is the government owing you right now delay in payment of your salaries?
Currently, the government is owing us 2 months. In some instances, the government is owing some of the employees even up to 4 months, and that is from July. And so we need to understand that as of December, all this anomaly will be handled. So all this will occur as of December, so that all will be regular. And this is why government along with us, we are expecting our signature to this MOU.
So what happens comes December and nothing happens? What are you going to do?
Obviously, the government is to go back on its word, but not living up to their own commitment. Of course, then we have to go back to status quo and see. And that is, we will commence our political action. But I'm going to tell you this. The fact that this government is showing a sign of willingness to even sit with us to dialogue, I think it's commending. Unlike the previous administration, workers at the rate of their forms, they were dismayed. Teachers were dismayed, not workers were dismayed. Only because they advocated for their members.
Mr. Johnson, thank you very much. We're so happy to talk with you.
My pleasure. You are most welcome.
Moinbak Johnson is the president of the Civil Service Union of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Female underrepresentation in politics continues to be a problem in Botswana, where only three women won seats in the 57-member National Assembly during last week's general elections. Activists say Botswana has a bias against women, both in its electoral system and its culture. Nkumdisi Dube reports from Haboroni.
After the 2014 general election, Botswana only had four elected female members of parliament in the National Assembly. The number dwindled to just three after the October 23 national poll. Women's rights group Gender Links Unetsi Makumalo blames an electoral system which she says discriminates against women.
We live in a very patriarchal society, a society that intentionally or unintentionally we teach people that a male person is a better leader than a female person. So we have a lot of women, even those that are capable, at times doubting themselves as to whether they can do this.
Currently, only 5% of women in Botswana hold political position, far from the 30% goal set by the regional bloc, the Southern African Development Community. Men hold the vast majority of political seats, even though 55% of Botswana's voters are women. A study by the women's rights group Emang Basadi found that the electoral system does not favor women who also face cultural barriers.
In politics, we're talking power relations. Women would rather give way to men and then stay behind this man and praise the man, elevate for the man and do things, fundraise for the man. But come to think about it, they can also do the same for themselves.
Three African observer missions expressed concern about the low number of female candidates in Botswana's latest poll. Sibusiso Moyo, who headed the SADC electoral observation mission, says the situation is not ideal.
The 2019 elections represent a downward shift in the representation of women in political leadership, particularly at the National Assembly level.
In response, President Mokgweetsi Masisi has promised to appoint more women to the National Assembly through a constitutional provision which empowers him to do so.
There are unfortunately very few women that we as a party were able to put forward. But thankfully, the constitutional provisions that allow for the election of specially elected members of parliament will be very heavily skewed towards the women folk.
President Masisi will be sworn in for a fresh 5-year term in Gaborone on November 1 and appoint 6 additional members to the National Assembly. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has called on the African Union to fight oppression and insecurity, which he said is the leading cause of human rights violations in Africa. Mr. Museveni reaffirmed his support for the death penalty to manage murder cases in Uganda. Moses Aviarimana reports from Kampala.
While officially opening the fourth African judicial dialogue in Kampala, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni called on the African Union to tackle issues of oppression and insecurity in the continent. However, he said that death sentences should be maintained despite being considered as inhuman.
Attitude to homicide. I am having some issues with some of our people. They think that a death sentence inhuman is what, but me, in order to manage these Africans the way they are now, I'm still with the law of Moses. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. For me, death equals death.
His comment comes as the government has been criticized of violating human rights, mainly on opposition leaders and journalists. Uganda is among 45 countries that are yet to submit declaration to the African Court. Joel Senyonyi is the spokesman of People Power, a movement of opposition politicians led by Robert Chagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine, a popular Ugandan musician and Chadondo East member of parliament. He accused the regime of torturing and killing those opposed to the government.
So this whole an eye for an eye, a tooth for a... Look, eye for an eye will leave the whole world blind. When you see the way Mr. Museveni's government treats his opponents, those that criticize him, they are beaten, they are brutalized, they are tortured, people are kidnapped, and others have been killed, a good number of them.
Opposition members in Uganda said that the government is delaying to submit the declaration to the court for fear of prosecution. Sylvain Ore, the African court president, called on Uganda to submit the declarations to the court.
The brilliance of this crown
would shine with incomparable brilliance if it were accompanied by the tiara of the state's declaration of the protocol establishing the African Court on Human and People's Rights, allowing individuals and non-governmental organizations to directly petition the court. This would actually be an extension of access to justice that you have promoted in your constitution, which contains a true charter of human rights.
A two-day African judicial dialogue aims to identify the major human rights issues currently facing Africa and the role of judiciary. In Africa, 30 countries ratified the protocol establishing the African Court, with only 9 out of the 54 African states have submitted declaration to the court, and their citizens and government organizations can access their court. In East Africa, only Tanzania submitted the declaration, while Rwanda withdrew its declaration in 2016. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Kampala.
Most residents of Nairobi do their cooking on stoves powered by firewood, charcoal, or kerosene. The stoves emit smoke and fumes that contribute to deadly respiratory diseases and release harmful carbon emissions into the atmosphere. Now, a small startup company is offering Nairobi residents an alternative source of energy that makes cooking both cleaner and safer. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Catherine Mutua, she has always used charcoal and gas to cook for her young family, but the source of energy she grew up was becoming too expensive. She found out that she can also cook with another kind of fuel, ethanol.
Kitambo nilikuwa natumia gas na pia jiko.
Mutua says, before I was using the gas and charcoal, I shifted after I was educated how the fuel is cheap, safer for the kids, for the environment. Mutua gets the ethanol from a filling station set up by the Coco Networks, a Nairobi-based startup. The company also sells the ethanol stoves that cost a customer about $70. Regina Anyango runs a food kiosk in Kangemi neighborhood in Nairobi. She says she no longer battles black fumes spewed out of a charcoal stove.
So far, it has been very economical. No fume, faster to use when you're cooking, and then it's easy to control.
According to health experts, fume from charcoal and kerosene contribute to respiratory diseases. They also produce carbon emissions that are heating up Earth's atmosphere. Ethanol, by contrast, is made from food sources like sugar or corn and is considered carbon neutral. Some officials believe this kind of alternative source energy can help reduce the number of trees cut down for the use of charcoal or firewood. Michael Wakoli is a fuel supply manager for the Coco Networks. He tells VOA ethanol is a more practical and convenient fuel to use.
Typically, traditionally, what would happen is that because of the nature of the fuel that you'd use to cook, kerosene, charcoal, you'd be forced to cook outside because of the harmful fumes that you have. But we're giving you an in-house cooking solution, which is 203 meters away you can get for very small bundles, taking care of the fact that you have needs of the pocket and how much it costs, so that you can be able to reach you and have a clean cooking experience, have an enriching experience, and use, of course, ethanol, which is renewable energy.
Wakoli says the filling stations are in a part of Nairobi with huge populations that are usually neglected.
So we have typically targeted the dense markets, so Kawangware, Kibera, Kitengela area, Embakasi, Kahawa West, and things like that, where we can reach as many people as possible, and because knowing the need of the people and being near to the MRI.
Coco Network says its customer base has been growing and now serves up to 3,000 people. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's it for this Thursday, October 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I am James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and next week, I would like to invite you to join Border Crossings for a special broadcast just for you. We'll be bringing you one of the greatest music producers in American pop music, Nile Rodgers. Listen to Border Crossings to hear the best songs from some of the greats like Chic, Madonna, David Bowie, and Daft Punk, all with one thing in common, produced by Nile Rodgers. Don't miss this great program next week at 1500 Universal, right here on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. and our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.